It was so fun to be your plus one.
Oh my
You know, like
God.
literally even the tickets said Angela, you know, two tickets on the little envelope. And yeah, I loved it. I loved it, you know, because I never
Oh, that's
forget you
very
moved.
sweet.
It's not that I'm so important. If I had moved to Costa Rica, I would have been your plus one to most things. Just by virtue of the pragmatic truth of life, you moved to where I'd been living already for 15 years. It makes sense that you would kind of, you know, be
That's such
meeting
a,
people through
actually,
my connections and that
that is
sort of
such a
thing, but.
great point to make. I didn't see it that way. That's so cool. It's like I'm established now. That feels great.
Look at that fancy new setup on your
I
fancy new
know.
computer.
I just realized it's the first time we're gonna do this. On my new computer, because I didn't have anything installed. I've been rushing for like the last, what, 5, 8 minutes trying to download a Zoom and do all the technical annoying things to get this sorted out. But yay, new setup. Thanks to my payment of the painting of the opera. I bought a computer without payment, so yeah.
You did not buy a computer. You built a computer from scratch. Like for
Yes, I
real
bought
from
all the
scratch.
parts.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Honestly, I was proud of it, and it's funny because this morning I was thinking, and I wrote on Facebook, we should celebrate our little victories, because who else is gonna do it? Nobody's gonna do it for us. So whatever it is, I was thinking, look, I
You just mean
literally
in
was
life,
talking,
like any victory
yeah.
in life.
Anything, anything, anything. I literally was talking to Austin like before hitting record that I don't want to talk about me because in the last episode we talk about me about the exhibition, but it's a little contradictory. So Austin wanted to talk about the opera, and I was saying I don't want to make this about me though. I want
Yeah, but
to come back to our.
if we make 100 episodes of this, and there happen to be two in a row that fixate on achievements of yours. The thing is, I'm not going to ignore this huge milestone. You had a big commission from the LA Opera, and then opening night of their production of Traviata, this huge display of that work. I'm not going to be like, well, we kind of talked about your thing before. It would be
Right.
like if you,
That's very sweet
you
though, but
know, like if you won like a championship and then won in a gold medal in the Olympics 2 weeks later, those are two independently worth commenting on.
it's true, it's true. Anyway, I just want to make sure that I didn't want to make this about me because it feels a little bit like
Your
that, but
disclaimer has been logged, and everyone can know
yes,
that this was my
I know.
pressuring and not
Yes.
you, not
Okay,
your
that's good.
narcissism.
Thank you. How are you doing? How is
Good.
all the
I just
madness?
finished. I was because you needed time to install Zoom, I was able to finish watching episode 5 of the new animated X-Men 97 series,
Ah,
and
yeah,
I.
so how you're liking it?
It's the first episode that I was like, holy shit, this show really actually is taking itself seriously. Like it
Oh,
has been
really?
up to this point, but you know, it's been 30 years almost since the show was on the air. So the first few episodes were very, in my opinion, very bogged down by, you know, like kind of rehashing nostalgia. It was kind of like
Right.
they were establishing a larger arc,
Right, I get
but
it.
it was
Setting
kind of
things
like
up.
it felt like remixing the classics because it was like, okay, this episode we're bringing back this villain, and then this episode we're bringing back that villain, and then this thing we're doing that, and it felt like, I guess, you know, the old show was, you know, obviously adventure of the week, you know, this week, oh no, it's Juggernaut, oh, this week it's Mr. Sinister, blah.
Right.
But I don't know. I found myself going, it just seems like they're trying to make fans go, okay, I remember all that nostalgia, blah, blah, blah. So I was kind of like, I was watching it out of loyalty to my younger self, from back in the day when I was so passionate about that show. But I was not, like, blown away. But episode 5, holy shit. That's like a real piece of filmmaking. Like, it nice. Really, it really, I texted Andy Grush just now, and I was like, dude, holy shit. And he goes, nice. It destroyed me. He goes, it completely.
Whoa, okay. I'm curious. At least it's not episode 100, like the One Piece fans claim to.
No, I think there's only.
If you want to watch it, you should resist 100 episodes, and doing is going to get great.
I think they've only, I think season one of, like, this X-Men 97, I think, is 10 episodes or something.
Right. That's exciting. I might be curious later. Good to know.
Although they are supposedly, it says here, working on a second and third season. But,
Nice.
Yeah, they really, I hope, I won't give any spoilers, but they did some stuff that's, like, pretty major. And I hope they don't come up with, like, silly ways to kind of make it not count, you know? X-Men does have a bit of a history of doing that.
Yeah, you know, like, it was all a dream.
Yeah, or like time travel, they kind of undo all right. this really, you know, big stuff. Like, I remember in the movies, they did this big thing in one of the few redeeming qualities of the third movie was that in order to win this big battle, they stab Magneto with that serum that removes his power.
Mm-hmm,
and it was supposed to feel like we basically just killed Magneto, a major, major character, because if he loses his power, he's just an old man. He's just some random guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it felt like, you know, they really are playing for real. You know, they're trying to do something serious with this. And then at the end of the episode, you know, as their little post-credit teaser, you see Ian McKellen playing chess, and he kind of moves his finger, and the chess piece kind of wiggles, like, oh, maybe he has them back. And it's like, if you remove all the stakes of your decisions, then, you know, why? It's just a soap opera at that point,
right,
you know?
Right.
It's
well, you know, it's in retirement at the end.
Yeah, but it could be more. All they have to do is remove that one scene, and now it's drama. You know what I mean? And so anyway, this episode did stuff on that level where it was like, this is real. I actually found myself really tense watching it. And I thought, Jesus, this reminds me of a few times when I was a kid and it made me tense. And it's not making me tense right now in a nostalgic way. It's making me tense because they're actually doing something they've not done before. And you don't really know where they're going to go with it. Like, and that's what is real filmmaking, if not that. It was very exciting. It's actually really cool to see someone not just doing lame nostalgia stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. Anyway, nice. La Traviata. So.
Yeah. Sorry, I heard the doggies.
Yeah, our next handful of episodes are likely to be heavily interrupted and chaotic due to puppy energy.
Hopefully not. They're being very chill right now. So hopefully not.
Yeah,
we'll
turns on a dime. So, Andrea Pacino, dear friend and member of the board of directors of the LA Opera, commissioned a work from you to be part of the premiere in some, that was not clear exactly what was going to happen.
It was all a big experiment, and we didn't know if that was going to work out. And he didn't even know. He just let me do my thing. He said, I want a painting of this opera that is going to premiere this day. You do you. Don't show me anything. I don't want to see anything. I started feeling nervous. I didn't know if he was going to like it. But anyway, he commissioned the painting. And the experiment was... I was going to say showcase. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the possibilities. What's been exciting about it was that it was not entirely clear what was going to happen. And it seems like...
We didn't know if they were going to like it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Him.
Yeah, he doesn't have the power to make the LA Opera do things.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
There is the first
one. She's brought you a tribute.
I'll try to ignore them because, yeah. Oh my God, the second one is here. Yeah, I'll try to just...
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we didn't know anything. We didn't know if it was going to work, if they were going to like it. I painted the thing for months in glimpses of, you know, a few weeks, but it was like 6 months of work. And then we took it to the building, to the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, mm-hmm. which is a very iconic and very historic place.
It's where they used to do the Oscars back in the day.
Whoa, I didn't know that. That's mm-hmm. cool. So we did an unveiling, a private thing with the,
at the
members
board meeting.
Of, yes. And seemed that they liked it. And after that, the premiere happened this weekend. The decision was, the final decision, the painting will stay in the entrance of the building, and they are going to use the images for the banners on top of the building. It's a huge banner that if you guys
just haven't ignore me while I do this.
Socials. What are you doing?
I spilled water on my keyboard. Keep talking.
Oh my God.
Just edit this audio
out. I
can't
talk over that.
Yeah,
it's too loud.
Okay, here.
Oh my God. Yeah, well, you keep cleaning. And it's on top of the building, and they use it for the program, and the painting is up for auction right now. There is a online thing happening, and it's been out there for a few days. It's going to be for like 20 days more, I think. And
right.
All the money is going to go towards the LA Opera. Like, I'm out of that. I did my part. I'm doing my part. No, that was earlier today. I was playing Helldivers. But anyway.
Yeah, bottom line is that it could have just been a, here's a lovely painting by a local artist inspired by La Traviata in some general vague sense. And isn't that nice? And, you know, maybe we could auction this off if we can find some opera slash art lover that wants to support the LA Opera. That could have been one outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, they ran Facebook ads with it and Instagram and stuff, and then said, let's make this the program cover. And then, yeah, the big banner on the side of the building. And to have the painting as the first thing you see when you walk in the building, to go there, you know, behind a nice red velvet rope, they really positioned it as the brand of their production, you know, and the style of their production. Even though there's nothing literal connecting them, you wrote the music. I mean, you made the painting, you know, finished it, what, in August or something? September?
Yeah. It
was like a half a year ago, well before you had any inclination of what would be in the production, you know, like the look of it or the color palette or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome because I loved seeing how over the moon Andrea, who commissioned the painting, he is the most opera fanatical human being who has ever lived. And
he
knows everything about everything, and particularly about Verdi and Puccini. You know, he knows every single work of theirs in extreme depth. He can tell you in great length about, he could practically tell you what Verdi ate for breakfast every morning while he worked on it. I mean, he literally just, he has such a deep knowledge of the who and the what behind it all. What was so gratifying was that he, with this commanding knowledge of Traviata, saw it and just, and freaked out, your painting, I mean, because he felt like you captured it so much and not in a superficial way. In other words, you captured things that are not even there on the surface and are kind of hidden in the subtext.
I love that so much. We have like a 40-minute call. He was explaining the story and who is this character. And with that knowledge, I jumped on YouTube and watched a few of those productions.
Like full productions,
Saw the full story, and then went to, you know, my iPad and started sketching. And he loved it. I felt so relieved. I honestly don't know his taste in art, and I was not sure if he was gonna like it. If he didn't like it, I would just plug it. How do you say plug the cord? Like just
pull
just
the cord.
Abort the missions.
Yeah.
Pull the cord. Abort the mission, because if he doesn't like it, so this is not gonna work.
And you got a lot of love that night. You know, we were invited to the to a private dinner with the director of the show and with a bunch of the members of the board and the president and the vice president and the chairman of the board, and And then after the show with the cast party and all the performers.
I felt a little exposed since it's the first time I am the head of a table. I know this is not, it wasn't important in that moment because the heads probably were like the opposite, you know, in the center of the table. But I was at the very, but it felt very exposed for some reason.
Yeah, the funny thing is he messaged me a week or so before, and he said, "I've requested that she sit at the head of the table, but don't tell her."
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, because he knew that you would shy away from it, but you were like this guest of honor, and it was important to him that you be treated as such. Oh. And you were given shout outs by, you know, the LA Opera is, I think, the second largest opera company in America behind only the Metropolitan in New York. They are a major, major multi-million dollar institution. And you have here the top three leaders in the form of Christopher, Keith, and John, all basically singing your praise to everybody who will listen. And in a big room full of donors and the performers and all that, to be your painting to be given a big shout out and to be prominently positioned right next to them, and of course the conductor James Conlon. It was awesome. It was so gratifying to see. As someone who not only watched you work so hard on that, but also for the last 6 years has watched you work so hard in general in what you do, it really felt like a major milestone. That's why I refuse to not talk about it on this episode.
My plan was to skip it, but I'm happy to.
Not at all. It was a big deal. Happened. And and for your exhibition to be so interwoven with classical music, we can phrase it that way. I never liked that term because it's so inaccurate. But normal people call it classical music, so fair enough. Okay. Your exhibition, obviously, we collaborated on insofar as I provided you pieces to contemplate and respond to. And I think it's cool that for someone who, you're a big music lover, but you've always said, that's not my area of expertise. You know, you're like a 60s and 70s rock and metal fan. Yes. and a lot of other things. You have a very eclectic taste, but at your core, I think of you as, the Beatles and onward.
Yeah.
From there, historically.
That's accurate.
And yet, you've gotten really great works out of responding to classical music. And I personally, I know selfish, just because that's a lot closer to my world, I want to see more of that. I want to see you
react to more
of it. Actually, I mean, I don't want to...
These two are two classical. Can't remember which one is what, which piece. But yeah, no, these two are actually one piece. You remember it was the.
It's a little blurry on here, but yeah.
It was the one that, because I know what this painting is. The one that made me feel like underwater.
I just realized something.
Oh. Wait, pause.
I just realized I'm not recording the Zoom call. I'm only recording my audio. It just occurred to me, I'm so used to, because you use like OBS and all that, and my brain just was like, oh, the video's on your side. I totally realized I forgot. So I'm going to hit record.
No, that's
not. Here we are now with video.
Oh, my Lord.
Just make it a surprise.
What am I going to do with that? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. You were saying. Yeah, well, look, I it had been like a month since we recorded the last one. I'm out of practice, apparently.
Oh, my God.
Do you look at the painting and think, I feel good about it? Or do you look at it and go, now that I saw their production, there's things that would have been cool to do instead? Or now that I heard the opera one more time, there's things I might have changed? Like, I have a very revisionist ongoing history with my own work, so I'm curious.
I'm pretty satisfied with it. I wouldn't change anything. Honestly, it looks great. I love it. That's rare.
You certainly killed yourself over it, so it's good that it actually sort of was worth it in a way. But yes, I just was curious because obviously something we didn't mention was that the LA Opera's production was really visually lovely and just full of color and tasteful choice. You know, it was pretty traditional. It wasn't like they put it in modern times or things the way some people will do. Like, it's pretty common for opera to play around with setting and stuff, and or to give them unique costumes that are kind of strange, you know, because it's one of the few things you can really change and still be faithful to the piece, because they don't really ever change the music. And so what is left is the staging and the costuming and all that. So this one was pretty traditional, but it was so striking. I mean, it was just so... There were multiple times where we both were like, this is like looking at a painting. And there was part of me that thought, I'd almost love to see you kind of mentally snapshot this and then make another painting, just because it's wonderful to see you react to that stuff, much like your Banner Saga recording session painting mm-hmm. is one of my favorites ever of yours, where you just snapshotted a moment, but then you made it something that it obviously in a literal sense is not. And it's so exciting. I like this thread of your career. You know, you've reacted to musicians and you have like your Daft Punk Pink Floyd painting or your Beatles crossing the Abbey Road crosswalk.
Music has been always there. I just didn't pay much attention. You know, you had to come in my life to make me realize, oh, there's a whole thing that I can develop over here. And it's exciting and it's inspiring and it's unique.
A lot of modern artists, especially if you go to galleries and things like that, a lot of contemporary art is very often rooted in sort of analysis of society. It's you read the descriptions of the paintings and it's always, this is the artist juxtaposing how small they feel next to society's problems, or this is about, you know, capitalism as a insatiable monster that must always be fed, or this is about how war will kill us all. You know, you read, it's just like it's such a common thing. There's also tends to be a bit of a negative kind of cynical quality. And what I love is that there's a purity and an optimism both to your work, just responding to a different medium basically and saying music and musicians and bands and whatever have inspired me to paint. And I'm basically just taking what I hear and putting it on canvas. I find that very refreshing. Obviously, I know I'm very biased because you're kind of reacting to my corner of the world, but but I feel like I would think that regardless, you know, because I mean, for example, there's amazing fan art in the world that I love and admire, including some that you've made. But mm-hmm. I find it more satisfying that you're not trying to really emulate anything or just make a love letter in quite the same way that a fan art. Like on Twitter, I'll see Stray Gods fan art from people. And that's awesome. But there's something different about going, how does La Traviata make me feel? Or what does the Britain 4C interludes from Peter Grimes make me feel? And just react in a very pure way and almost an abstract way.
I'm pretty sure if we go a step up, Stray Gods, it's that your team kind of did its own thing based on something that existed.
Right. In other words, you're saying Stray Gods is not Greek pantheon fan art?
Right.
Yeah.
It's its own thing and it's unique.
That's an interesting analogy. Different. That's an interesting way to compare what we did to what you're doing with regard to music. I actually totally see that as a viable analogy. The goal is not to recycle something or to make...
Do you remember the conversation we had with Stephen about matter? You don't create it. It's only you can transform it. So this is what's happening. Like, that's art.
I guess that's true in both cases, though. A fan art is still transforming the source, but the difference is one is seeking to transform it much more thoroughly, you know, because fan art is kind of like a little salute, so it's a very minor transformation of the original.
Right.
Whereas you are,
as you said,
you're taking a piece of music or an opera or whatever, and you're passing it through a filter that it's changing. It's like
it's
going through a total atomic reimagining.
Right. No, it's a reflection of what I feel and what I think. And it's my own thing. I'm not replicating anything out there.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess that's it. I don't even know how we're going to call this episode.
It's called La Traviata versus the potato.
Fight!
I don't know. I never. That's always my most difficult part of this process. But
yeah.
No, anyway, I'm very proud, and I've just been so happy, and it was so fun to be your plus one.
God!
You know, like literally, even the tickets said Angela. You know, two tickets on the little envelope. And yeah, I loved it. I loved it, you know, because I never forget you moved. Sweet. It's not that I'm so important. If I had moved to Costa Rica, I would have been your plus one to most things. Just by virtue of the pragmatic truth of life, you moved to where I'd been living already for 15 years. It makes sense that you would kind of, you know, be...
That's
meeting
such a,
people
actually,
through my connections and that sort of thing.
That is such a great point to make. I didn't see it that way. That's so cool. It's like I'm established now. That feels great.
Yeah,
I didn't
absolutely.
See that plus
I mean,
one thing.
And like yesterday, you're hanging out with people that, you know, on some level, I guess I introduced them to you, but I feel like at this point, you've now spent more time with them than I have. and I love that. That is exactly you kind of defining your own path and your own
Boy,
place.
Yeah, it's been a while, and yeah, it was taking forever. It's just that I'm after the pandemic, I felt so, you know, so like non-social. This like I don't want to go out. I don't even have a car. I have no connections. I'm in this world, I'm in my room, I'm creating art, and I'm not going out. And it's been so hard, because obviously I'm a social person, but somehow I kind of like developed this after pandemic mindset.
Got out of the
of,
habit also.
Yeah,
Combined with the fact of getting a dog, like that, you know, became a bit of a chore to leave. So it was like, it kind of felt like special occasions.
It's true,
was
that's true.
Justified both of us leaving at the same time.
Yeah, I guess I can blame her too.
Yeah. And then we get a second dog, which reset the clock again.
For now, they're
fingers
crossed. They're gonna be fine. Yeah, I hope so. But no, it's amazing.
There she is, right on cue.
Yeah, I know. I'm so happy. Like this, I never saw myself basically calling myself painter of music, but I'm loving it, and
seems,
you know, maybe
I'm gonna
evolve, and later I'm gonna do more other different things, but that's how it is, and I'm excited.
I guess that's all we need to talk about this time.
Yeah, it was like an update.
But there's no need to belabor the point. We'll have more exciting news soon.
The episode is Celebrate Your Victories.
100%. Any reason, any excuse to celebrate, I endorse, even though I've never made a big deal out of birthdays or things like that.
Man, you have to do it this year.
That is true. This year's the big 40.
He's rounding his age. So this year is important.
A few years ago, I went to Troy's 40th. And he performed for everybody and put on a full show. He literally rented a theater and put together a band. I remember I brought him Serena. He needed a violinist. And he put on
a
show.
That's cool, yes.
And then he had rented out kind of like a back area at a bar nearby. So after the show, everyone went over there. And pretty sure that was the first time I met Travis and Laura Bailey and Matt Mercer. It was a bunch of first time meeting folks, I think, of that circle. But it was really cool because it was really like, I want my closest friends to have a good time. Instead of making it you showering me, let me entertain you. It's kind of like how a few times when I was growing up, my dad gave me presents on his birthday.
That's cool.
It felt like that, you know. It did not feel like I'm on stage, everyone pay attention to me. It would be easy to see it that way as like a very narcissistic way to do your birthday. Like, I'm going to perform. But it wasn't like that. It was like, I want to give to you. It's how it came across. It was very genuine performing at Hotel Cafe. I loved it. So I've been thinking about if I have some equivalent to that, you
know? I mean, if anybody, you know, you guys can tweet.
Problem is, when I perform, I need like a 50-piece orchestra and stuff, so.
Oh my God, no. We receive tweets, ideas, comments on Instagram and emails. If anyone has any crazy idea that I can think of.
Seth MacFarlane does this every year for his birthday. He literally hires a 100-piece orchestra for his birthday.
God, yes.
And does a big tent in the backyard of his house.
Amazing.
And he'll get like Alan Silvestri to come do, you know, 30 minutes of Silvestri music and that kind of thing. It's pretty astounding.
Jesus.
I guess I need to go.
That's so cool.
I need to go make a few $100 million on
animated
series. And I can do that. Because that sounds
awesome.
I'll
give you the next 10 years for that. That sounds great for the next.
Crazy thing is, by this age, he had already had that for 10 years. You know, he was like 24 or something when Fox greenlit Family Guy. He was the youngest, I think he was the youngest, like showrunner for an animated series in history, for a primetime show.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Something like that. Pretty astounding.
Goals.
Family Guy, I think it's crazy to think that started in 99, 25 years ago.
Oh my God.
Anyway, I will offer up an album of the day that I just thought of.
Oh, yes. Amazing.
In honor, as a lateral move off of La Traviata, a few weeks ago, the LA Opera's previous production was a doubleheader of short one-act operas where they do one opera and then intermission and then a different opera afterward that are because they're both short. And the first, the second one they did was by this Austrian composer that is seemingly forgotten. I knew nothing about him. Astoundingly, if you look him up on Spotify, there are a lot of recordings of his music, but he's kind of an unknown as far as I can tell. I don't remember him once coming up during my education in school, for example. Like, we never studied his music, which says something in its way. But his a Viennese, I assume he's Viennese, an Austrian composer named Alexander Zemlinsky, and he wrote this one-act opera called The Dwarf, the German Der Zwerg. And James Conlin is the only conductor to have ever conducted it in America. He did the one here a month ago or so. And then the only other time it's been done ever in America, period, ever, was 16 years ago. They did it at the LA Opera, once again, him conducting. The crazy thing is the guy that plays the lead was the lead back then, too. And by all accounts, for people that were there at both, he was even better this time, which is rare because 16 years is a long time for an opera singer. That it's kind of like the Olympics. You tend to retire young because the voice cannot handle the physical demands that opera requires. Since there's no microphones or anything, it's a very physical activity. Anyway, so there is a recording that can be found. If we can link to it on Spotify, the Alexander Zemlinsky, James Conlin conducting. It's an orchestra in Köln, and it's called Der Zwerg, Der Zwerg. And it is like... it's like a lost 1930s Hollywood film. It has this very, very Straussian, delicious chromatic quality. Andrea and I went to the dress rehearsal, and we were both sitting there. Within 1 second, we looked at each other going, how have we never heard this? And then by the end of it, we were going, why is this not an opera that is performed constantly? Because it has this very... powerful and painful story. It's one of those where it's based on an Oscar Wilde play where it's a young princess is given a dwarf as a gift by the Sultan, you know, like she's the princess in Spain, and on her 16th birthday a Sultan gives her a dwarf who has been raised his whole life to never see himself in the mirror. So he thinks he's kind of like a jester. He's sort of like treated like a court jester, but he doesn't know. But he's all disfigured, and he's all horribly ugly.
Oh my God.
And but he doesn't know he's ugly. And so she treats him like she doesn't even see him as human. And he falls madly in love with her. And she's so cruel to him. And
oh my God. It's
Oscar Wilde wrote a play because he saw a painting that inspired this of like a young girl being given a gift of like a doll that's a human, basically. And he wrote this play inspired by this idea. And so then this opera took the play and set it. And
where's the,
it's
another perfect example of the matter can't be created.
Yeah, sort of one medium talking to another, back into another. Yeah, absolutely. It was so affecting. It was one of those because, and the cast was so good. And
can we have like, is there a video?
I don't know of any recordings of video of it. There might be like a DVD of some. I did see when I looked up on YouTube, I found like a trailer from some production in Europe, you know, that they will release ahead of time sort of thing. And it was interesting to see.
What language?
It's in German. I found it astounding. I mean, it was so, it's about an hour and a half, hour, 20 minutes. And I went and saw it in the dress rehearsal and then opening night with Andrea, and we were both just speechless the whole time. And then Rachel, who plays Violetta from in La Traviata, she came into town to start the rehearsals for La Traviata while they were still finishing the production of this. I texted her, if you have a chance to go see The Dwarf, I said, I never heard of it, go see it. And she texted me back the next morning, like, holy shit, how is not everybody know this? And she went and saw it a second time on its final day. If I hadn't been so busy, I would have gone again as well, because I really wanted to see it again, because they did amazingly smart things with the production here at the LA Opera. Because it's a slight spoiler, but like the whole thing is. Well, okay. I won't say it. But I don't know how you'll ever see it, but I won't say it.
Is it? Are they?
It's literally
not
never been
do it
done
anymore?
In. Well, it, okay, it's go been ahead, done go twice ahead. In American history. I mean, literally.
Go ahead.
We would have to hunt it down. The big sort of finale is she forces him to look at himself in the mirror and see that he's a monster. And the way they staged it is she closes him in a room and all the doors shut and all the doors are mirrors. And the way they did it in the opera, it's like he suddenly is trapped and he sees himself everywhere. And because he had been raised in seclusion where he would see a reflection in like the edge of a knife and he thinks it's a ghost that is tormenting him, because he thinks that can't be me. That's a monster, obviously. And because, again, he had been raised to never know what he looks like. And so whenever he sees this reflection, but he never saw a full mirror. And so then when it all comes crashing down and she thinks it's a joke and she doesn't care. And she's like, oh, my doll is broken. And she wanders off and he basically dies of heartbreak. And it's twisted. I was so affected. It affects me now even thinking about it. It was so...
Oh, my God.
It was so powerful. I've so rarely been that moved by an opera. Or by anything. Jesus. By any stage production. I mean, it's like watching West Side Story or something. It was... I don't know if I cried. Madama Butterfly made me cry.
Did you cry?
No, it's more just like haunting. It's one of those where it's like this glimpse of human cruelty where it just makes you feel like...
It's not sad. It's actually...
It's haunting. It's bothersome. Makes it feel like, oh, that bitch. It's more like, it's more like looking into this darkness and just feeling something cold touch you. Really, it was so powerful. It was just so damn powerful. Anyway, but the recording, the music, in the end, the staging is in service of the music. The Zemlinsky wrote an opera that it's just every measure is loaded with ideas. So anyway, it's my album of the day. Go listen
Amazing.
To Der Zwerg. The link will be posted. Totally. It's pretty astounding. I wish there was
Thank
possible
you for this.
To see
I'm
it.
So
it,
curious.
It's a shame that it's so incredibly hard to see. That's why I'm a little bit loose with spoilers, because I literally don't know how you would see it. Other than maybe finding a bootleg on YouTube or something.
Yeah.
And who knows how that performance was. True. You know, like, for example, LA Opera, it was a normal height guy. And they just, like, your brain kind of does the math.
Right.
Because he's all, like, he walks with a hump and he has makeup and stuff.
Yeah, there's no
But, like, I saw on YouTube. I saw a trailer where they had, like, off stage, like, a singer. And then they got an actual person with dwarfism to basically be a stand-in, and it felt weird. I was like, I prefer theater is about suspension of disbelief from the audience. It's not like movies where you use CGI and stuff. It didn't. I liked the way the LA Opera did it better than what I've seen others do in this regard. But Anyway, that's it. Let us know your suggestions for my 40th birthday, and we'll catch you next time. This is Aria saying hi.
Saying hi and saying bye.
Bye.
So I'll go play. Bye.